One.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. My name is Alex Clark. I am your host today, and I am joined, as always, by the man whose focus is unbreakable and the charisma unfathomable. It is Matthias Almakurasaki and Ryan Splash Potts. My main man, how are we doing on this fine Monday evening?
First, I'd like to give a shout out to the Houston Rockets for lining my pockets with some cash. Otherwise, I'm doing well. Yeah, we're vibing. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'll get to this eventually, I think later on today, but I'm enjoying what's going on in the sports world right now because we are reaching the point where not only is the World Baseball Classic going on, but March Madness begins. The NCAA tournament begins this week. So I'm obviously going to be filling out my brackets, and I'm looking forward to watching all the sports that are going to go down in the next few weeks.
Speaking of March Madness, I'm definitely going to be watching the women's bracket this time because my Cougars are in the March Madness tournament for the first time, what feels like forever. So, congratulations to WSU women's basketball. You guys have been killing it this year. But other than that, I'm actually doing pretty good. This is the first day in a long time. One of the good things about daylight savings is I got out of work and there was still light outside, which I felt weird. But no, it's good to go. And now we are ready to talk about some baseball. We're going to start out with our top fives. We are now going to be doing two on this because we needed to make sure that we wanted to get all of our lists in before opening day. So we're going to do two lists today, and we're going to focus all on pitchers. We're going to be talking about the best starting pitchers and the best relief pitchers. So covering up the entire spectrum of arms here. We're going to start out with the starting pitchers here. Again, as for those of you that haven't seen what we do, it is a ranked top to, as I from the top five, start with five, going up to number one. We all have our own list. We'll kind of defend them a bit. We're going to kind of go a little bit faster this time, though, because we want to make sure we get everything in on time. So I'll start off, I guess, with my number five going into the starting pitchers realm. And I feel like I probably have probably one of the weirder lists here, but I've already gotten approved, so it's all right. Number five, I'm going with the former MVP in Shohei Ohtani. So Ohtani, I was considering putting a lot higher on this list, but I had to remember that with this, it's just starting pitching. I'm not referring to him as a hitter. I'm not referring to him as anything else. The one thing I did integrate with him that does have to do with hitting is the fact that when he does hit, when he does pitch, he's still hitting in these games. We had the introduction of the Shohei Ohtani rule in last year's Major League Baseball. So we can incorporate it, just the fact that that is something that is added to his repertoire. But other than that, he is still a dominant arm, a fastball that can get close to 100, a splitter that is one of the most deadly in all of baseball. And when he is on the mound, you know that you are facing someone with true intimidation factor. You try to look at his stats, and to be fair, I don't think they really show the entirety of what he can do. He is a stellar pitcher. You can talk about what he is, and he is. I still think he is always going to be a Cy Young candidate as long as he plays well because of his offense. But the fact that over last season still had a pretty solid 11.87 K rate, and then only a walk rate at 2.39, which is a little high, but really not that bad. And then a pitcher WAR 5.6. I mean, that's good for a starting pitcher that also plays, again, also plays offense. That's solid. It also will be, I think, the only time that in our lists that we have someone featuring twice, just because, again, well, that's what he does.
Yeah, so number five for me, and this is I'll say that these two lists I think were the most difficult to rank out of any of these because of just deciding on five guys to include. Ohtani just misses it for me. The only reason why is that he's only had one full season where he hasn't had some type of injury really that has so he's been able to qualify for the ERA title. So at number five, and granted, this guy also was hurt last year, but when he was healthy, he was really, really good. And at number five, I have Max Scherzer. And entering last year, Scherzer was probably top three. But Because he didn't qualify for the ERHL, he only threw 145 in a third innings. I have to bump him down to number five. There's a world where next year he's maybe higher, but then again, with all the young arms, you never know. So this year, though, in 145 in a third innings, 2.29 ERA, 173 strikeouts. Just overall, very good. Only allowed 13 homers, struck out 30% of the batters he faced. Very good K to walk ratio of 26.4%. His fastball velocity was actually, you know, right around where it normally is, which is good. His advanced stats also show that he's basically doing what we expect him to. I mean, his expected ERA was 2.87, his FIP was 2.62, his xFIP was 3.23. Overall, just a very good season from Scherzer, as expected. I'm looking for him to stay on the field more. I understand he also had a bad postseason start, but overall, I think Scherzer's still a top five starter, so I have him at number five.
Yeah, and I'll agree with your sentiment, Mac. It's tough to rank these guys because you think about other positions, say center field. There's 30 starting center fielders out there. So you'll have a list of between 25 and 35 guys. Maybe a team has, you know, two capable starting center fielders. Like, say the Angels have two shortstops that you can't really decide between, but every team has six starting pitchers. So you have 100 guys that are, you know, you're trying to condense down into a list of five. But I will have a different name than both of you coming in at number five for me. I have the 2021 NL Cy Young Award winner, a player that one of our colleagues once called a FIP merchant, Corbin Burnes. So last year, another excellent season with the Brewers, led the NL in strikeouts, led the NL in starts, pitched 200 innings for the first time in his career, was an all-star seventh in Cy Young voting, an ERA below three for the third season in a row. And he's just a guy that he's going to go out there, going to throw seven innings, going to strike out eight, nine, 10. Doesn't walk many guys, doesn't allow many hits, doesn't allow many home runs, and just the consummate pitcher you want in this modern day of baseball. You know, he's not going to throw 250 innings like guys of yesteryear, but he's going to throw 200 innings, 180 innings. They're all going to be quality, very consistent, excellent stuff. He's a guy that is going to be an ace, and I know it might not be in Milwaukee, considering the Brewers and Burnes are at war over arbitration right now. But wherever Burnes goes in the coming years, if that's Milwaukee or a different club, he's an ace.
I'll be real. That just kind of shook me a little bit. I was not expecting to have Corbin Burnes at number five. I have him a little bit, just a little bit higher up in my list. I don't have Scherzer on my list. And it's not to say that he's bad, obviously. He is a fantastic starting pitcher. And honestly, in my opinion at this point, he's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Unless, like, you know, something else goes on with the amount of caliber that he has. All right, let's move on to number four here. Mac, how about you go first for the number four starting pitcher?
So at number four, I have Corbin Burnes. And if you ask me at the All-Star break of 2022, I probably would have had Corbin Burnes at number two or number three. But he only had a 3.9 ERA in the second half, which is what sort of bumps him down for here. I know MLB Network ranked him at number one, but for me, I can't put him at number one. But still, he led the NL in strikeouts with 243, was very good still. Through 202 innings, that's a career high. 2.94 ERA, his xERA was 3.05. His xFIP, though, was 2.85. So overall, his numbers are good. He gets a lot of ground balls, although his home run to fly ball rate went up. But he still averaged about 96 miles per hour in his fastball. I love his pitch arsenal. Great sinker. Overall, he's a good player. I mean, it was going to be hard to replicate the only allowing seven homers in 167 innings and the 1.63 FIP he had in 2021. But he's still a great pitcher. He definitely is top five. But that second half sort of bumps him down a peg. So I have him at number four.
And I think that's totally fair. And again, we're kind of splitting hairs with each member of our top five. So I'll go ahead with my number four, and that is 2021 American League MVP, Shohei Ohtani. So last year, of course, he qualified for the ERA title and has the unique feat in MLB history of qualifying for both the ERA title and the batting title in the same season. 2.33 ERA, 166 innings, 219 punchies, led the American League with 11.9 Ks per nine. The walk rate is continuing to lower each and every year. Didn't allow too many home runs. And, you know, with the stuff Ohtani has, he's only going to allow 6-7 hits every nine innings. And that's impressive, right? So he misses bats. When he does hit the bat, it's soft contact. It's not a lot of anything, nothing special. So Ohtani is, you know, a beast. And there's a world that he's a better pitcher than he is a hitter. And I think that's a world that we might be living in right now. A 172 ERA plus last year, that is preposterous. He didn't have a 170 OPS plus when he won the MVP. So just let that sink in for a moment. He's going to have a whip around one. He's going to strike out 200 batters. The devastating splitter. He throws as hard as anyone in the game. And there's a stat from Foolish Baseball that Ohtani was the number one pitcher in the clutch in high leverage situations and the number one hitter in the clutch in high leverage situations. So yeah, let that sink in for a moment.
No, yeah, Ohtani is a fantastic pitcher. And I think it's really, again, incredible to see that we have a player that can do both jobs so incredibly well, which is the reason why I keep putting him as my number one contender for MVP. So, especially hearing your guys is at the bottom of your list, I'm a little worried for some of the guys that I have at the top of my list, but we'll get to that when we get to that. My number four, this one may be a bit more of a wild card. We'll see. I'm going with the brother of one Austin Nola, Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola had himself a very interesting 2022 campaign. It was not the highest of win percentage. We don't care about win percentage. No things we do care about. We care about your strikeout to walk ratio. 8.10 was fantastic. His walks per nine, 1.3. He was a Cy Young contender, top four in 2022. Had over 200 innings pitched. And again, even then amassed 235 strikeouts. And an ERA plus of 125. Was it the best year of his career? No. But he had himself a very, very, very good year. And as I look at these things, I find it really hard-pressed to say that he's not going to do it again. Yes, has he had problems going back-to-back in some years? Absolutely. Especially 2021. Not his best campaign. But looking at what I'm seeing here, it's really hard not to think that this guy's done something right. Like, especially considering that he's averaging less than one homer per nine at 0.8. He's averaging a strikeouts per nine strikeouts per nine of 10.3 with that strikeout to walk ratio at 8.10. Like, that's what you want in a pitcher, especially on a team that, remember, last year did make the World Series. Like, I think we need to make sure we remember that part just a little bit more. Yes, there's a lot more that went to it. Yes, very much. I am putting some little bit of emphasis on that. You're welcome. But, no, I honestly, with Nola, I think he's a guy that sleeping on a little bit. A lot of times where he's been very streaky. That's true. But the big thing that I like when it comes to him is that even when he is streaky, he's still putting some of the big pieces first. He's making sure he's walking. He's not walking not too many batters. He is striking out a good number of batters, and he's keeping the ball in the yard. That is those are things I think are very important. That's why I have him at number four. So now we're going to move on to number three. Splasher, the only one hasn't started yet, so let's start out with you.
I always have trouble unmuting my microphone. Maybe that's just a skill issue on my part, but one thing that wasn't a skill issue in 2022 was Justin Verlander. So he comes in at number three, the new pitcher for the team that wears blue and orange in New York. No names. Verlander, 1.75 ERA across 175. Look, there are better seasons in MLB history, ERA wise, innings pitched wise. This is just poetic, a 1.75 ERA and a 1.75 innings. Just the stuff was there. Maybe not as, you know, prime Verlander in terms of fastball velocity, but Verlander now, I think more than ever, is a pitcher, you know, and that's cliche to say, but it's the general thing is you want to develop from being a thrower to a pitcher. Well, Verlander's stuff for a long time was so good that he could succeed on being a thrower. He could throw no hitters based on being a thrower. You know, he could be a first ballot Hall of Famer just being a thrower, but now he has almost two decades of professional pitching in his repertoire, and it's watching a master. It's turning on Gordon Ramsay masterclass. It's watching Magnus Carlsen play chess. It's just everything works in an orchestra, and it's, you know, the fastball, it's the off speed, it's the breaking, it's the, you know, the little battles within the battle. You know, it's, you know, getting that first strike, getting that second strike, forcing the hitter into a bad situation so that Verlander is most often in that positive situation. He's going to a dead ball arrow ballpark in Queens. He might get even better. I know he's leaving the pitching factory that is Houston, but if there's any ballpark in baseball that suppresses runs, it's Citi Field in Queens.
So this is where my list gets interesting, I think, because coming in at number three is Jacob deGrom for me. And this was incredibly difficult to do because if when he's healthy, Jacob deGrom is probably my number one. But as they do say, the best ability is availability. And the last two seasons combined, he has made 26 starts, and he hasn't even thrown up enough innings to qualify for the ERA title in one season. Last year, he came back and he was pretty effective. I mean, he struck out 42% of the batters he faced, struck out 102 batters in 64 in the third inning, so giving him a 14.2 Ks per nine against just a 1.12 walks per nine. So very good strikeout to walk ratio, 12.75. His fastball velocity was still 98.9 on average. His ERA went up to 3.08. That's largely because he allowed nine homers, which that was the one concerning thing for me, was that when DeGrom was allowing runs this past year, he was allowing a lot of homers, which was unlike him. Ever since 2017, that's not been an issue for him. Look, 3.08 ERA, 2.24 expected ERA, 2.13 FIP, 1.53 XFIP. But can he stay healthy? He's already had to deal with side tightness this year. You know, if he stays on the field, great. I'll put him back at number one. But he has to show me that he can stay healthy for a full season. And look, the Rangers, they know what they're getting themselves into. He's going to be 35 this year. So I'm very curious to see how DeGrom does in Texas. But he's number three for me. If he does well, great. He can go back to number one, maybe.
So here's my thing, and this is probably going to give me a lot of flack. I don't have DeGrom on my list. And the reason why I don't have DeGrom on my list is because of the fact that I'm not sure how much he's going to be playing.
Yeah, I almost left him off, but
yeah, that's my thing right now, is that if we're talking about pitchers going into 2023, if you're just looking at pure talent, DeGrom is probably number one, maybe even number two or three. But if you're looking at a guy that is, if you're looking for a player that is going to be on the field and actively produce for their team, I don't know if DeGrom's going to, because he is hurt and getting hurt frequently. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, I'm going to go with my number three right now. And this is one where I'm pretty sure my list is vastly different, as one Splash could probably attest to. I went through my list with him earlier on the day. But I'm going Gerrit Cole. I think that Gerrit Cole is another pitcher that has done some really interesting things. I'm not sure. He's one of the most interesting guys because he's had such up and down. Because of, again, we had the whole spider attack issue. We've had his tenure with these other teams. But there is one thing that is kind of undeniable, and that is the fact that he is a strikeout machine. He is a true strikeout artist. And I think that especially when you're playing, it's like when you're playing for New York right now, you have to be able to put up your A game. And I think that Gerrit Cole has done that. Is he the best pitcher in baseball? No. Is he in the top five? Absolutely. I don't know. There's something that's telling me that he's going to have a fantastic year going into 2023. This will probably be the receipt that cancels me off this show. But I have him at my number three slot.
I mean, that one caught me off guard completely, because if I'm being honest, and some Yankee fans will probably hate me for saying this, but I don't even think I have Gerrit Cole in my top 10. He's probably like number 11 for me. So yeah, that those are my thoughts.
I mean, like I'm being real here. My list is very weird, and my I'm only gonna get weirder.
Yeah, right, well, I can see where you're coming from with Cole. He's not in my list, but the stuff is great. The volume is great. You know, the ace vibes is great. He was nails in the playoffs once again. And like, there's a lot to like, but then again, there's a lot of pitchers to like in baseball, and you have guys like Spencer Strider has crazy stuff, right? You have Luis Castillo has crazy stuff. You have, you know, a ton of these guys have awesome, awesome stuff. And then some ace type characteristics, you know, Zach Gallen, Max Fried, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, guys like that. But it's just tough to choose five.
Well, Alex, I feel like you're kind of teasing us there. Want to go first for this one?
Yeah, sure. Let's go first for number two then. And man, as I'm looking at this, I really want to put this guy at number one. I probably should. So, you know, I'm calling an audible on my own thing right now on the show, calling an audible. My number two is Corbin Burns. Corbin, I think, is another fantastic pitcher that when you watch him pitch, when you watch him go on the mound, he's another guy with that intimidation factor. He's a player that when you see him out on the mound, he is one that sinker that he throws is absolutely electric. You watch him go out and play, and he's a guy that's really only come to true prominence in the last couple of years. He's another Cy Young Award winner. I mean, what do you want from him? He's a fantastic pitcher, a fantastic arm, and yeah, he's had some injuries in his career, and he's definitely had also some up and downs like you guys talked about. But when he is on, and he's on more often than he's not, he is one of the best arms that I'm not going to say that we've ever seen, but he is definitely one of the better arms in the last few years. He's a pitcher that you guys already kind of talked about some of the better points about him. So I'm just going to leave it with this. He's a true ace. And in a pitcher in a ballpark like Milwaukee, I think that he is another guy that's a really strong candidate. Well, can be an ace on basically any team.
So coming in at the second spot for me, Splash had him at number three, but I have Justin Verlander. And it's crazy because you look at the last three full seasons that Verlander has pitched, and he's just, you know, second in Cy Young voting in 2018, one in 2019, one in 2022. He's aged. I don't know if other than like Randy Johnson, I don't know if we've seen a pitcher age as well as Justin Verlander has. Also, I don't know if we've seen a guy get Tommy John surgery in his late 30s and then come back and win the Cy Young Award. This past year, 18-4, the 1.75 ERA, 185 strikeouts in 175 innings. He wasn't giving up homers. He cut his home run rate down to 0.62 home runs per nine after that was his one weakness in 2019. He gave up 36 homers. That was his one weakness, and he basically eliminated that. Everyone was dogging on him in the postseason because he had a bad game one start, bounced back with a pretty good start in game five. So I'm very excited that he's going to be in New York. I mean, he's been one of my favorite players to watch, and his mechanics are, if I wasn't a side armor, I would want Justin Verlander's mechanics. So yeah, he's number two. Obviously going into his age 40 season, but his fastball velocity looks like it's still there in spring training. So yeah.
Yeah. Verlander, absolutely a stud, but I'm going to go with a different NL East pitcher at number two here. I have the reigning NL Cy Young Award winner, Sandy Alcantara. And I said that Verlander was, or I said someone was a bit of a throwback. I just totally blanked. But anyways, Alcantara is a true throwback to, you know, the good old days of pitching, right? The days of your reliever or your starter is going to give you seven or eight innings and your closer is going to come in and get the last four, five, six outs. You know, that was the baseball that I grew up with, right? That was the baseball of the 2000s. This is the era of Johan Santana, the last remnants of the Braves' big three. And you have pitchers throwing 200 innings every single season, 225 innings every single season, 250 innings, which hasn't happened since 2011. Shout out to Justin Verlander. And Sandy Alcantara comes out, and he once again throws 200 innings. This year, 228 two-thirds innings, leads the majors, six complete games. You're not taking the ball out of Sandy's hands. Threw a shutout, had a stretch in early May that in 2 weeks against the Braves, at 17 innings, allowed one run or two runs. Like, just preposterous. Had an ERA close to two for most of the season, had a horrible start against the Dodgers that kind of inflated it. FIP below three, WHIP below one. He checks off every box you can imagine. He has a rocket launcher of an arm. He can, you know, dial it up to 99, 100 miles per hour. The strikeouts can come and go, but again, like a Verlander, sometimes the strikeout is not the most efficient way to get through a game. Sometimes you're going to need to induce some ground balls. Sometimes you're going to need to rely on the defense behind you, which Miami, be warned. But I think Alcantara is the best pitcher of an era that I think is leaving baseball. Now we're becoming more specialized. Relievers do crazy things. They all throw 103. They all have cutters. They all have, you know, Ephus changeups that go 72 miles per hour and always find the corner of the strike zone. But Sandy, you're a real one.
Yeah, no, and I'm very much with it. I think Sandy is a fantastic pitcher.
Yeah, and I mean, so I'll just go ahead and go first for my number one. Sandy is my number one. And there's not much to say that Splash didn't already say. I mean, I really appreciate that he's a real throwback. You know, 220 two-thirds innings. He threw more complete games than any team had. And what I love is that not only is he a workhorse, but his average fastball velocity is 98 miles per hour. I mean, this guy, you think of an innings eater. You think of guys like Mark Burley, probably, or, you know, a knuckleballer like R.A. Dickey or Tim Wakefield, or, you know, the list goes on. But you think of, like, the soft-tossing guys. This guy has triple digits in his back pocket, and he can pitch, give you 7, 8, 9 innings per game. There's not a lot to dislike about Sandy Alcantara's game. I'm really happy he won the Cy Young Award. He fully deserved it. 2.28 ERA also. Plus, he had a 53% ground ball rate. So he's a sinker baller who can throw. He throws hard. He gets soft contact, and he can strike people out too. So Sandy's number one, and honestly, he might be number one to stay for a while.
No, 100%. Sandy is also my number one. I think that Sandy Alcantara is an amazing pitcher, an amazing hurdler that is very much a throwback, like you kind of said. I think that I like to make the kind of equivalent here to a bit of a Felix Hernandez. Why I'm making this kind of thing, I know that Felix probably had a little bit more velocity to him, but what I like about him so much is that he is a true workhorse. He is someone that every time, I remember Prime Felix back in Seattle, every day was Happy Felix Day, because you knew that he was going to go out there more than likely throw 7, maybe even 8 innings, and the bullpen was going to get a rest that day, because he was just going to keep throwing, and that's exactly what Alcantara does. Alcantara is able to put together masterful outings when he goes out, and he's able to do it while saving a bullpen, which is so important in today's baseball, in my opinion. As we are getting more and more specialized, relievers are used more and more and more and more, which, I mean, yes, that's a good thing, but at the same time, relievers do need rest too. Like, you need to be able to rest your guys on occasion, and Alcantara does that better than anyone in baseball. Led the majors in innings pitched and batters faced last year. And even while doing that, still had an ERA plus of 178. Remember, 100 is like average player. You almost doubled that with Alcantara. He had a FIP of 2.99 and still solid strikeout to walk ratio. So strikeout walk ratio of 4.14, showing a little bit. Again, how good some of these other players like Nola are. But I really like what I see from Alcantara, and he's a guy that, look, there's one more stat that I want to bring up. I mean, we kind of already talked about it a bit. Complete games. Again, we talked about that he's an innings eater, but he had 6 last year. He had 6 complete games, including 1 complete game shutout. Like, in this era of baseball where we have so many relievers doing everything now, seeing a guy not just go 5 or 6 innings, but go the distance, it's like we're not going to see probably anymore. So him being able to do that, it's a relic of the past that is, as we said, is aged like a fine wine. So right now, Splash, you have your number one?
Yeah, I have it number one, and I am very happy that this guy is not in the National League East, and he is not on the Braves schedule 5 times a year anymore. He's probably going to be on the schedule once a year for the time being, unless he's hurt. And that is one, Jacob DeAlways injured, formerly of the New York Metropolitans, now the Texas Rangers. And look, the innings, yes, I mentioned it with Alcantara. The innings are great. Ohtani crossed the innings threshold for the first time. Burns crossed 200 innings, 175 innings from Verlander. Listen, when Jacob DeGrom is on the mound, there is a different aura. There is a different atmosphere. You are watching one of the greatest to ever do it. You are watching a guy, in my opinion, the second he steps foot on a major league mound in 2023, he should be a Hall of Famer. If he gets hit by a bus on the pitcher's mound after he throws his first pitch as a member of the Texas Rangers, I would vote him into the Hall of Fame. That said, yeah, the innings are going to be an issue. Who cares? He strikes everybody and their brother out. He doesn't walk anyone. He rarely allows home runs. He's just a guy. It's just a force on the mound, just an outs accumulator on the mound, unless you spine the Washington Nationals in the middle of August. Just unstoppable force of nature. He had a whip of 0.746 last year. That is preposterous. He did have an ERA over 3. That's a little bit of bad luck, a little bit of weird defense from the Metropolitans. But you mean to tell me that a player with a 0.746 ERA or a 0.746 whip isn't the best pitcher in baseball? I don't know what to tell you. The last time Jacob DeGrom had a whip above 1 was 2017. Since then, he won the Cy Young. He won the Cy Young. He was 3rd in Cy Young voting. He was 9th in Cy Young voting despite missing half the season in 2021 and probably should have received votes last year, except he only threw 64 innings. He's the best pitcher on the planet. I know that version of him might not be there for 200 innings like it was in 17. 18 and 19, and he's only pitched about 200 innings the last 3 seasons combined, but it is a once in a generation type thing we watch with Jacob DeGrom. It's like watching watching Mike Trout play offense. You just don't see that. There are other great pitchers. There are other pitchers that are active now that will be in the Hall of Fame. There are other active pitchers that will be first ballot Hall of Famers. Jacob DeGrom, I think, is the best one. He has the best peak of anyone active. And I think he's as special as they come. And I'm glad the Mets no longer need his services, apparently.
Yeah, no, I think that right now he is a fantastic pitcher. And again, when healthy, is going to dominate now the ALS, making me a very, very scared man. But the key words, when he is healthy. So that's our list. Who do you agree with? Who do you disagree with? Probably my list. Let us know on Twitter at LAR_baseball. But we're going to move on now to our second list. You're going to get 2 for this time. It's time to talk about relief pitchers now. So now after the starters are out of the gates, it is now time to go to the bullpen. And now we have made our list of the top 5 relief pitchers. So I'll start us off with number 5 on this one. And you know what? I'm throwing another curveball. I should say probably another fastball, because my number 5, I'm playing the homer card. I'm going Andrés Muñoz. Andrés Muñoz, in my opinion right now, when he is on the bump and when he is on, is one of the most deadly pitchers in all of baseball. One of the few guys that has a fastball that averages over 100 miles an hour. Not throws it every now and again. Averages over 100 miles an hour. And when he developed that slider, because he was basically just a fastball pitcher, when he developed that slider and he started integrating it last year, there was a very clear click, basically, of what happened. He went on a full change from being this guy that's just going to be a normal middle reliever, situational 6th, 7th inning guy, to being a dominant closer. There's a reason why he's one of the main focuses of the Mariners bullpen, Los Bomberos, the fireman, because he is a flame-throwing reliever. Andrés Muñoz, when he got his one chance to pitch in 2021, looked horrible, was not good, but there are things to build on. And then as 2022 started to go, you could see the talent there. At the very beginning, it took a little bit of time, but he kept integrating that slider, just kept on throwing it, kept on throwing it. And people are thinking, why are you throwing the slider? It's not working. Just keep throwing your fastball. At least there you're going to get some production. But when that clicked, and when he got that slider down to that nasty turn that it has, it may not have the turn of a Matt Brash, but it's got some good bite to it, and it pairs off real nicely with a fastball that can chime in at 102, 103 on occasion. So Andrés Muñoz, my number five there. And like we said with starting pitchers, there are so many relievers that we could go through on this. It's really hard to nail down a top five. I want to put Muñoz in. I know that he's unproven. I know that he has all this, and I know that this is very much the homer pick. But Muñoz, fantastic reliever. He's my number five.
So I'll say this right here, that this was the toughest rankings I had. Like, in my head, this was the toughest rankings to make, because relievers are also incredibly volatile. And I think my guy at number five is the perfect example. And at number five, I have Josh Hader. And Hader, coming, if you had asked me a year ago who's the best relief pitcher in baseball, I would have said Josh Hader. This year, though, he had one really bad stretch, which ballooned his ERA up to 5.22. He could not get anyone out in July and August. But then the last month of the year, he looked like Josh Hader again. He only allowed one earned run in September. And, I mean, look, his expected ERA was 3.54. His FIP was 3.51. His FIP was 3.45. His xFIP was 2.94, which shows me that Josh Hader is still an elite relief pitcher. He still averaged 97 miles per hour on his fastball. Heck, he hit triple digits for the first time after he made a mechanical adjustment in September, and he was fantastic in the postseason too. Josh Hader is still a great relief pitcher. And I think don't let that one bad stretch distract you, because he's going to be back next year. I think that Padres bullpen is going to be scary with him closing games out. So I'm at number five. He could easily be top three next year.
I'm actually going to agree with Alex here. Number five for me is also Andrés Muñoz. There are a few pitchers in baseball that have what I like to call God-tier pitches. And Andrés Muñoz happens to have two of them. A couple of the guys moving up the list also have one of these God-tier pitches. Muñoz has a just explosive fastball, incendiary fastball. Just unspeakable things will be done with that fastball. And then you pair it with a brilliant slider, and I think you have a top five relief pitcher there. And I know there's, you know, going to be some variance. There's going to be some months that has an ERA below two. There's going to be some months he has an ERA above six, just like Mac mentioned with Josh Hader. But I'm going to trust the stuff. I'm going to trust the swings and the misses, and I'm going to trust the absolute pure unadulterated filth that comes out of Andrés Muñoz's arm. 13 strikeouts per nine, I will take that. A whip below point or 0.9, I will take that. Give me that any day of the week, twice on Sundays.
Splash, you made me so happy. Like, I thought I was crazy, but if you're agreeing with me, let's go. I'm more than happy with that. All right, let's move on to number four. Mac, how about you give us your number four relief pitcher currently going into 2023?
So number four, I have Josh Hader's successor in Milwaukee, his former setup man, Devin Williams. This guy, he doesn't throw the hardest. He only averages around 94 miles per hour, but man, that changeup he throws is absolutely filthy. That's all I can say about it. He had negative 8 run value on it this year. Granted, it was negative 14 the year prior, but I mean, still an expected batting average of 185 against it. I mean, and the thing is, his four-seamer actually made a huge improvement. It actually had a positive run value, which is not good for pitchers, but it was negative 7 this past year, and batters only hit .90 against it with a 128 slugging percentage against it. So his fastball became really good. Overall, though, other than his walk rate, all right, he walked 4.4 batters per nine, so that's a little concerning. You know, that's a 12.5% walk rate, but a 40% strikeout rate, giving him. Oh, and he only allowed, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, he only allowed two homers in 60 and two-thirds innings, which career high number of innings pitched. So 1.93 ERA, but then also the rest of his stats, his advanced stats back it up: 2.04 expected ERA, 2.01 FIP, 2.36 xFIP. Devin Williams is going to be an absolute stud at the back end of the Brewers bullpen. His Statcast page is basically all red, so I am at number four.
Mac, yeah, you are in that. Your bag, my friend. At number four for me, I also have one Devin Williams. The airbender changeup is one of the top five pitches in baseball. I'll get to a couple of the other ones moving up the list, but actually that'd be a fun thing to rank, top five pitches in baseball. What a category. Williams is, I'm going to compare him to a very different pitcher in Christian Javier of the Houston Astros. The fastball velocity might not be there, but what the hitter sees does not match what the radar gun says. So Javier throws this disappearing fastball. You know, he gets such extension and hides the ball really well. He's deceptive in his delivery that his 94 mile per hour fastball looks like 98. Devin Williams functions the same way when you have to focus on the changeup so much and you have to think, he might just throw the airbender and I'm going to be on a pitching ninja video later that night. I think that is an active thought in batters' minds that I'm going to look like such a doofus in this at bat, I probably don't want to go home to my family tonight. I'm going to sleep in the car outside the ballpark. That is how good Devin Williams is. That is how consistent he is. And there's nothing more special than just a changeup, like making batters look like they're facing like a level 7 curveball. Like it's a changeup. It's not a breaking, it just is a changeup and it baffles everyone and it's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And that changeup is absolutely nasty. I don't have Williams on my list. He just misses out, like just barely misses out. My number four is Josh Hader. I think that Hader is a fantastic arm that when he is on, like I said, there's very few lefties out there that have the kind of gas that Hader has. His ability to throw a great two-seamer, a great fastball is really second to none. And if he gets that full stretch when he is playing exceptionally well, I mean, there's very few relievers that you would rather have above Josh Hader in any given one scenario. I will always have a bit of a sour spot then just because he cost me a bet one time, and that will always make me feel very, very sad. But regardless, he is still a fantastic arm and one that is going to be feared, especially come playoff time for the Padres. So we're going to move on here to number three. Splash, lead us off with your number three reliever in baseball.
All right, listen, folks. I know relievers are volatile. I know their ERAs fluctuate year in, year out, but there's just a couple things we know about relievers. First, the top two are the top two, and I don't think that's going to change, at least until one of them realizes that it's an odd year and that he's not supposed to be very good this season. The other thing we know about relievers is this guy I'm about to mention always has an ERA in the twos. Let me just look at his baseball reference page, and thankfully it's not loading, so I get to, you know, ad lib for a second. Hopefully everyone had a nice day. All right, 2016, 2 ERA, 2017, 2 ERA, 2018, 2 ERA, 2019, 4 ERA, whoops, still above average considering the ballpark he was pitching in, 2020, 2 ERA, 2021, 2 ERA, 2022, 2 ERA. Since 2016, this pitcher has the third best ERA plus in baseball, only behind Jacob DeGrom and Clayton Kershaw. Pretty good group to be in. His name is Raisel Iglesias. He is him. He is him. I do not need to hear one of these bozo Mets fans or bozo Mariners fans I share a podcast with trash on this guy. He is consistent every single season. I'm just going to read off his ERA pluses. 169, 181, 176, 112, 181, 174, 165. Last year with the Braves, he allowed one, count them, one earned run in 26 innings. The most important 26 innings of his life. Do or die every single outing. He was absolute nails, absolute positive nails, and kind of bailed out a mediocre stretch that he had the first half of the season in Anaheim. He strikes out a bunch of guys, makes a bunch of guys look like absolute idiots with their soft ground balls. He is a top relief pitcher in the game. I will not hear slander. Again, 160 ERA plus since 2016. Bow down, peasants.
Very tough talk for someone within muting range. but
okay, listen, Alex, your Bozo team has scored 0 runs against Raisel Iglesias. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, your Bozo team lost Zygaio 2 straight home runs against mine.
He was not pitching. That was Kenneth Jansen.
Yeah, I know, but we still went back to win it. Anyway.
No, stop it. You allowed a bunch of runs to our Bozo team.
Yeah, but who got the W in the end? Who got that dub? Anyway. Regardless, no, yeah. Raisel Iglesias, you're right. He is a great pitcher. He's not in my top 5. Legitimately, he is probably number 6. Number 6, and competing right alongside Devin Williams. For my number 3, though, I decided to go with another arm here. I went with Ryan Helsley over here with the Cardinals. I mean, looking at what he's done, I mean, he's one of those players I just don't know a whole ton about. But I know that he's dang good, and 2022 truly proved it. He made me remember the name, Ryan Helsley. A 2.7 war over last season with a 1.25 ERA. That right there should just tell you a lot about what you're going to see. He's only been playing in baseball for 4 years, right? Not a whole lot to work with. But he still has 141 games. He still has a dominant stretch with him where last year, I just want to make sure I bring this up here. The only reason why he's not number one is because of the time that's been going on here and a few other names that are just really, really good. But he had an ERA plus of 306. 306. 100 is average. He is worth 3 average ball players in 1. Like, how do you get past that? Ryan Helsley is one of the most dominant arms we have in today's game. The only reason why he's not number one is because of the time that he's played and the fact that we have 2 other guys here that I think that when they are on the mound and things are going at least somewhat right for them or a fluke doesn't happen, they're absolutely unhittable.
Yeah, so I have Helsley at number 3 too, and Helsley was always a guy who had good stuff, but it was a matter of can he throw strikes? And it looks like this year he finally figured that out because he cut his walk rate down significantly from 13.1% in 2021 to 8.4% this year. Also, his strikeout rate went from 22.8% to 39.3% in 2022. He opened the year as the setup man and then finished the year as the closer. You know, him and Giovanni Gallo sort of split that role, actually, but overall, he was fantastic. Plus, his fastball velocity increased to 99.7. On average, yes, he does tend to allow some more hard contact than the other guys on this list, but he throws just absolute heat. Negative 13 run value on his 4-seamer. His expected stats back it up: 2.04 xERA, 2.34 FIP, 2.60 xFIP. This just is he's dominant. The only hard part is the dynamics of the sport. I can't put him at number one, but still, he is electric.
Exactly. He's an arm that is going to be really good for a little bit as long as he is able to keep the ball in the zone. We're going to move on now to number 2. I'll go on with my number 2 pitcher. And this is one that, again, when he is on, he is one that is absolutely just insane to try and hit. From the Cleveland Guardians, I have 1 Emmanuel Clase. Look, there's 1 word that you need to say when you think about a Class A, and that is speed, velocity. This dude, when he is on the mound, it is it's incredible to watch what he does. Watching him play, watching him pitch, again, there's very few guys. I know I've thrown out the word fear a lot of times during today's podcast, and I understand that I'm trying not to do it as much. But looking at what he did last year, over 77 games, this dude faced, what was it, only like around 60? Yeah, he finished 67 games, 42 saves, which I'm always going to be a proponent for the save stat. I know not everyone is. I personally like it, but that's a discussion for another day. He did not play in 2020, did play in 2019, and during that time, still was pretty darn good at 2.31 ERA in 21 games, then doesn't play in 2020. 2021 finishes 5th in Rookie of the Year voting, and the next year is an All-Star. But even more than that, watching at what he has done, he had a 9.5 strikeout per 9. That means he was averaging at the very least over 1 strikeout per game. With his velocity through his pitches were absolutely daunting. and he really came into his own in 2022. He took over that role that he started taking over in 2021 and ran with it. 2021 had 24 saves, 2022, 42 saves, and an ERA still at 1.36. You talked about Raisel Iglesias having an ERA of 2 at that point. Well, Class A's got a career ERA of 1.47. A 2022 ERA of 1.36. I'm not trying to take a shot at you again on this one, Splash. I'm just talking about right now with Class A. He is a dominant arm, and the only reason why he's not number one is because a certain man that I can hear the trumpet starting to play in the background.
Yeah, well, so Emmanuel Class A, I mean, this, I remember he, when he first came up with the Rangers, I saw a video of him on Pitching Ninja. I'm like, all right, yeah, he's got pretty good stuff. Then he got suspended for PED, so he didn't pitch in 2020, but he's proven the last 2 years that he's amazing. You know, he throws that 100, 102 mile per hour cutter and a very good four seamer too. In fact, both of those pitches had run values of negative 10 or better. And they just, he didn't really, you know, the strikeouts, all right, you're probably like, all right, like, how does he not strike out more guys? But he doesn't really allow hard contact. In fact, he's one of the best at limiting barrels. You look at his Statcast page, it's literally all red. So you look in, like, his expected stats back it up. You know, 1.36 ERA, but also 1.97 FIP, 1.98 FIP, sorry, 2.18 XFIP, 1.97 expected ERA. He doesn't really need to get strikeouts, in my opinion. He's just overall really good. And so there's not much else to say about him, but, yeah, he's number two. Just because it's impossible to put him over the guy at number one.
Turns out the guy at number two, he's pretty good at being number two. So first off, he's the number two player that's famous for being related to a trumpet song. And two, he's the second most famous player of his own name on his own national team. And that is, of course, Metropolitan's legend and Mariners legend, Edwin Diaz. Diaz, a spectacular season. Look, it's an even year. He's going to have a one ERA. He's going to have a bunch of saves. He's going to be an all-star. He's going to be Jesus Christ on planet Earth in an even year. Odd year, not quite, but kidding aside, you know, Diaz, 17 strikeouts per nine innings last year. That is a preposterously high number. He had a whip below one. He was a major reason, the critical reason why the Mets were like 90-0 when they led entering the ninth inning or something comical like that, 67-0, something. A lot in zero, that's the point. Just dominant, a guy that is just going to take your lunch money at a certain point. And he's one of those fear guys that Alex talks about. He's a guy that is going to come in, he's going to intimidate you, and he's going to throw 100 right past you, and then he's going to throw a slider that drops off the table, and you're going to look like you're swinging at a balloon, and it's going to come in, it's going to be the size of a peanut. So, excellent pitcher. I really want to do a 1A, 1B here, because both of these guys had phenomenal seasons, some of the best reliever work I've seen. But for all intents and purposes, it is a 1A, 1B for me. You know, kind of pick your poison. One gets you in a little bit more of a difficult situation, gets you out with more punchies. The other doesn't put you in quite as difficult of a situation, but can't work out of such jams with the punchies.
And that's understandable, I guess. But I do think that Diaz is the better one just overall. But that's also just comes down to a matter of opinion. Mac, you said you have something you want to say on that?
I was going to say Splash should go first on this last one so we could hear his case.
I want to hear this too. All right, let's see it, Splash.
All right. Coming in at number one, I have Dylan Lee of the Atlanta Braves. Of course, he started a World Series game, so he might not technically be a really – okay, it's Emmanuel Clase. And the thing with Clase to me is, look, the strikeout numbers aren't going to blow you off the page like they do with Diaz. But one thing that jumps out to me with Clase is the number of games you go to the Cleveland page and you look at the box score in the ninth inning. You look at the line score, you look at what they did. There's never hits for the other team. There's never hits. There's never walks. There's never anything. It's always out, out, out. And it's just every time Clase came into the game, it felt like he was going to get three batters He's going to face two batters, get all three out, and the Guardians win. And with Diaz, it's a little bit different, and he's going to face four. He's going to get three out. He's going to allow a walk. You know, he's going to – something screwy is going to happen. Then he's going to throw a 112-mile-per-hour fastball right down the pipe, and no hitter on planet Earth has a shot of hitting it. Even though they know it's coming, even though they know it's going to be in a hittable locate, it's 112. It doesn't matter. So that, to me, is the difference between Clase and Diaz, that Diaz kind of walks around with a taser. Like, think of two guys walking down the street in the middle of the night. Clase isn't going to get bothered. Diaz might get bothered, but he's going to tase you, so it doesn't matter. He's going to get home safe. Clase is going to get home safe. Clase doesn't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to go buy batteries for his taser. Diaz does, but they are really good batteries, and he has the top-of-the-line taser. So that, to me, is the difference between Diaz and Clase. They're both going to get home safe. They're both awesome. Clase gets to save a little bit of money on buying batteries for his taser.
All right, well, that was not the analogy I was expecting at all.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure I wasn't expecting a taser analogy when talking about closers.
Look, talk about electricity, and Edwin Diaz is pretty good at
it. You know what? That's fair. I'll give you that. That's fair.
Yeah. So I know I sort of understand your points. Diaz is my number one. There isn't really a lot to say other than I cannot believe that this is the guy that I feel like every Met fan wanted to run out of town literally up until like last spring. It felt like everyone was like, oh my God, Edwin Diaz is not built for New York. Just get him out of here. And I think he shut them all up this year. I mean, here's the thing. He had a 1.31 ERA. His expected stats show that he's even better than that. 0.90 FIP, 1.04 XFIP. He struck out just over 50% of the batters he faced this year. That is unheard of. I mean, seriously, he faced 235 batters and he struck out 118. And he doesn't always pitch in the ninth inning, which he actually showed this year he can pitch six out saves, you know. But also, his slider, that was the pitch that abandoned him in 2019 when he had that awful season, which really he actually wasn't that bad if you look at his expected stats. But his run value on that slider was -22. That is insane. This guy is the best reliever in baseball. He got paid like it this offseason. I'm not expecting him to replicate this, but I don't need him to replicate it necessarily. As long as he's like 75% of what he was this year, he's going to be the best reliever in baseball.
No, yeah, Edwin Diaz obviously is my number one, and I know that's, you know, I can't say the homer picks on everything because, again, he played for the Mariners, he's played for the Mets, he has played against the Mets in Splash's case, against the Braves. But, I mean, I look at him, and I can't help but make the Andrés Muñoz comparison as well, where it's two pitches that matter. It's the fastball, and it's the slider. It is those two pitches, and when you do those pitches, it's like when you throw those pitches at such a high effective level, it is near impossible to hit. One of them, especially if you throw it high, then you have to try and catch up to either a 103-mile-per-hour fastball or a 92-mile-per-hour slider. And that 10-mile-per-hour difference, maybe even more, can really mess with a hitter, especially when you have to react within a tenth of a second to try to figure out whether or not a pitch is going straight at your head or going to break right over into the zone. So for Edwin Diaz, he is the best closer in baseball, and I will not let Mac forget at one point during that horrible stretch, he did offer me a trade in Paul Sewald for Edwin Diaz. But anyway, no, that was just a new conversation. Who do you guys have for the top closers in baseball? Let us know on Twitter at @LAR_baseball. But now it's time we're going to do a little bit of talk about the World Baseball Classic, and we're going to keep the shortest time for our three words only segment. We got a couple of prompts here. We're going to go through these a little bit quickly here. We have to nail each one of these prompts down to three words or less to describe our answers to them, for those of you that have not seen this segment before. So we're going to get right on into it with the first one here. So, guys, about the World Baseball Classic so far, what is the biggest storyline of the WBC right now?
I'll go first here. Baseball is fun. That's the biggest storyline here. You're seeing all these countries that are playing for the first time here, and some of these host countries too, like Chinese Taipei, they're just having fun, and I love seeing this. That's my favorite part about the World Baseball Classic. So, yeah, those are my three words. Baseball is fun.
All right, I'm going to go next. My words are great for everyone. This is an anecdote. Today I was watching Nicaragua and Dominican Republic. Dominican kind of rolled, right? Nicaragua brought in this guy in the ninth inning, and he just casually struck out three Major League All-Stars and should have had a 1-2-3 inning, but his left fielder couldn't catch a fly ball. He was in the Nicaraguan League. He was Rookie of the Year last year, and he is now in the Tigers farm system. You know, he goes out on the world stage, strikes out three of the best hitters on the planet, Juan Soto, Manny Machado, Rafi Devers. I think at least two of those three. Or actually, it was Rodriguez, not Machado. Sorry, Alex. Just strikes out three of the best, 20 hitters in the game. And now he is a professional. He's an American professional ball player. And I think that is an awesome story of all it takes is one moment. All it takes is, half an hour on some random scouts TV or half an hour. Maybe the Tigers had a scout in person. But he's a professional ball player now in the United States. That's awesome.
Definitely. My three words are almost as expected. Like, we all know the WBC is fun. It's really cool hearing stories, about guys that are like, teachers hitting home runs, or about butchers that are striking out major league hitters. It's really fun to see all those, which I expect that. The one thing I was a little not as expecting was two things, to be exact. The first of which being that USA lost a game in their pool play, which made a little bit of a scare that they may not make it to the next round, but I think they probably still will. The other thing that was definitely a big one is Puerto Rico throwing a technical perfect game, because it was a combined perfect game.
Wasn't 9 innings.
Yeah, it also wasn't. It was 8 innings, but 8 perfect innings with multiple pitchers. So yay. I think that's still a yay. Like, it's still cool. Still really cool. But no, right now, but the other teams have been doing basically exactly kind of what we expected. It's been all the dominant teams going at it. So that is the first one. So our second one for three words only, I'm going to say here for this one, we're going to do, what have we learned so far about the players in the WBC? This is mostly talking about, like, did we learn anything about some of the major league players that we know and love, or about players that we're maybe expecting to see? Are there anything that we've learned so far?
Splash, you can go first on this one, since I went first on the last one. Unless
I'll go first if you guys need a little bit of time on this one. All right, cool. My favorite thing is Mariners catcher controversy. Now, it's not right now. It is not right now. I'm going to be very clear about that. That is for a couple of years, maybe in the future. But Ford has had himself a fantastic World Baseball Classic. He's now earned the name of Sir Harry Ford. And it's really cool to see from it. Although Seattle already has one really good catcher in the big dumper Cal Raleigh. And also has still Tom Murphy and Cooper Hummel. So that's fantastic, but Hummel's going to be mostly an outfielder and can catch as needed. And Tom Murphy's going to be probably act as the main backup. But overall right now, I love what I'm seeing at this point. Ford has been fantastic during this WBC, and I'm really excited to see what happens when he does come to Seattle.
All right, I have my three words. It is Thomas covers all. This is in reference to Diamondbacks and Mexico center fielder Alec Thomas. He just glides. One of the news pieces of the last week is that Corbin Carroll, the top three prospect in baseball of the Arizona Diamondbacks, signed a long-term deal. And the thought is, oh, he's going to play center field. No, he's not going to play center field, because Alec Thomas is going to cover all of the ground in center field at Chase Field for the next 10 years. just his movement skills in center field are just insane. The way he tracks the baseball, the way he just immediately opens up to like fifth gear, just effortlessly. Are there better defensive center fielders? Yes. Are there any center fielders in baseball that move as effortlessly and as easy as Alek Thomas? I don't think so. And there's a good reason Corbin Carroll is going to be in left field for the foreseeable future in the desert.
So my three words are Japan is stacked. And I'll be honest, I don't know if any team is going to stop Japan this year. I'm watching them play. They have outscored their opponents 39-8. So far, I understand that they were not in the strongest pool, but they beat their biggest rival, South Korea, 13-4. I mean, seriously, Japan has their stars from the majors like Ohtani, Yu Darvish, and now Lars Nootbaar. But then they have their local stars like Murakami and also Roki Sasaki. Japan, I think, might just win this whole thing.
Japan, we did pick as one of the main powerhouses in it. So I would not be too surprised at this point right now. It's going to be really fun to watch what happens after we get out of pool play. But that's going to be it for our three words only segment. Let us know what you think about our selections again on Twitter. Now we're going to be moving on to our trivia segment, everyone, as we are back again with the Mac and Splash trivia face-off here, as right now Splash still has been the dominant player here. But Mac, you've been doing really well. And to be fair, I want to make sure you know, you've been kicking my butt whenever you play against me. And on top of it, also, I still love, again, your backyard baseball knowledge. Just basically beating out me. Not just beating me out, I made the trivia and you beat me out. So that was always fun. But for trivia, we are staying with the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, there's one thing that people love, and people love the long ball. People love watching home runs. And there have been 10 players so far in pool play. And I'm going to be, I'm pretty sure with these stats, because I just pulled them up a bit ago, they are not including today's games. So make it clear on that. There are 10 players that have hit multiple home runs. Only 10 players that have hit multiple home runs. I want you guys to go and name them. So what we're going to do here is I have a six-sided dice, and I'm going to roll it evens. Mac, you get to choose who goes first, and odds, Splash, you get to choose who goes first. I roll the dice, and it's a 2. So Mac, you get to decide. Do you want to go first or second? It's going to be our same normal knockout, and I do have a tiebreaker ready if we need to.
All right, I'll go first.
All right, sounds good. Mac, name me a player that so far in the World Baseball Classic in pool play has had multiple home runs.
Anthony Santander
is correct. He has 2. All right, Splash to you.
Joey Meneses
is correct as well with 2. So you guys have gone 1-for-1. Mac, over to you.
You go, I think this guy has multiple ones. Robbie Glendinning from Australia.
Yeah, Robbie's got 2 also on the board. So, okay, back to you, Splash. We're 3-for-3.
Young Ho Kong of South Korea.
Young Ho Kong.
I might have butchered the name.
I don't believe that is correct.
Darn.
So as I'm looking here, I don't see his name out of the multiple. So with Young gone, that is the first strike to Splash. It's like, Mac, on to you. Who do you got?
Yu Chang
is correct with 2 home runs. Splash, back to you. You got a strike.
Salvador Perez
is incorrect. 2 strikes for Splash. Mac, you may be on the cusp of your first win of the Mac and Splash face-off. Who do you have next?
Ha-Seong Kim
is correct. The one of these guys with 3 home runs. All right, Splash, back to you.
Brought this. Okay. Jurix and Profar.
I'm sorry. That is your third strike. Mac, you have one more to seal it.
We're reaching the extent of my knowledge all of a sudden. I should have an answer here. That's the issue. Oh my god. I know that someone on Japan did hit two. I'm blanking on the name though. Like what's what is
there's another name? I'm really surprised you guys haven't said, but that's all right.
There's a name you're surprised I haven't said.
Yeah.
Man,
I mean, to be fair, Mac, you've already won at this point, but I want to see if you can get at least one more name to seal it.
Okay, I don't think this guy has homered twice. That's the thing. Wait, hang on. I'm trying to... Who has been hitting home runs? I'm going to guess Shohei Ohtani. I don't think he's homered twice, though.
He has not. So, but still, Mac, congratulations. You have won today's edition of the Mac and Splash based on your first win of it. Now you only have to get eight.
Okay,
or
he's
10
definitely
more.
Won another one.
No, I don't think he actually has.
Not in a face off against you. I have not.
He definitely has won. It wasn't the Cy Young's one. It was
the backyard baseball one. I won.
Yeah, but that was because you did it by yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
There was another one. I don't remember what it was, but there was another one. I promise.
Oh wait, no.
You guys on Twitter, let us know which one did Mac win. Yeah, let us on Twitter at LAR_.
Now I'm gonna have to watch all of our previous episodes to just skip to the end.
Go do it. Comment on under burner accounts.
Was it? Did Bogarts hit two?
No, Bogarts has only hit one.
Ugh.
The names that you missed, and I'll save the one that I care about for last. Alex Hall from Australia has hit two.
Oh my god.
The one from Japan that you have is Shugo Maki.
That's his name, yes.
Yep. And then there is also Kunwo Park and Yuji Yang.
Okay. Did I say Young?
No, you said I don't remember fully what you said. If that is on me, then I apologize.
No, you're good. You're good.
The name that I've realized, I'm sad you guys didn't get, Harry Ford. He has two.
Oh.
Today he got his third.
Really? Okay.
Harry Ford, though. Like, that was the reason why I made the joke earlier about Sir Harry Ford.
But, okay, fair enough.
Anyway, fair enough.
Respect to Mac. I was garbage.
Fair enough. All right. Congratulations to you, Mac. But now, as we wrap up to the end of our show, we have the moment to ourselves as we give ourselves just a moment to talk about whatever that we really want to say. Does anyone have something that they would like to talk about? Does not have to be baseball related. Can be basically anything.
Yeah, I'll go first on this one.
All right. Sounds good, man. Here we go. You've got 3, 2, 1, begin.
So I mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, but we're coming up on like my favorite stretch of sports, I think, ever, really, really, because we have the World Baseball Classic going on right now. We have March Madness about to start. For me also, NCAA Swimming and Diving Championships is about to begin. Obviously, we have college baseball going on too. Opening day is about 2.5 weeks away. This is a wild stretch of sports that, you know, I say we all just try to savor every second of it because there's going to be so much going on and so much to watch that it's basically like literally never going to be a dull moment in the sports world. So I'm super excited for this. I get to watch ten of my teammates, my old teammates, go compete this week. And yeah, it's an exciting time to be a sports fan, especially if you're a baseball fan or any type of fan.
Completely understandable. Splash, would you like to go next? Or you want me to go next?
Yeah, I can go.
All right, sounds good. Your time starts in 3, 2, 1.
All right, folks, let's talk about movies. So if you have a favorite movie, make sure you drop it in the comments, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you can comment, I'm not sure, or just tag us on Twitter. What is your favorite movie? Doesn't even have to be a sports movie. I've been wanting to watch No Country for Good Men, or No Country for Old Men, for a while now. I finally got it on I don't think I was supposed to say this legally, but I finally got this on a stream, and I couldn't pause the stream, so I had to abort. So I think I'm going to try to watch it on Hulu or HBO Max or whatever, but I couldn't get the password. I guess I'm not supposed to say that either. I'm going to try to watch it legally at some point in the next little bit, but make sure you spend some time, relaxing, get some R&R, and one of these days I'm going to watch RRR, which is an Indian movie that sounds fascinating to me.
Yep, fair enough at that point. My favorite movie, by the way, of all time, Anchorman. Anyway.
Great movie.
So I'll go on my fantastic movie.
There's a 60% chance that's your favorite movie.
You're not wrong. For me, it's a 100% chance because it is my favorite movie. Anyway, I'll go on my moment to myself in 3, 2, 1. So right now, I have been playing D&D style games for about 5 years now. I've never been a leader of the game except for like little one-offs on things. I am finally putting together my very first game, and I'm excited to see how it's going to go. I'm a little nervous just because of the people that I'm going to be playing it with, trying to make sure that everyone knows what's going on, because I have to not only get them interested in the game, I have to get them I have to teach them the system itself, which is a bit of a daunting task. Thankfully, the interest seems to be there, and I've already talked with all of them and things are fine, but the reason why I'm bringing it up now is I didn't realize how much of my mental brain space that it was going to like just consume, because I was thinking, how about if I do this, or what about if I have them go and do this. I like, even while I'm at work, I'll like, anytime I have any downtime, I'm immediately thinking, how can I make the encounter go a little bit more interesting, or how can I put this cool little story element I just thought of into the story. So if you've ever run a game, I appreciate you, and I know that there's a lot of work that goes into those. But that is it for the moment to ourselves. I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in. Make sure you go follow all of us on Twitter. You can go follow me at the Sports Guy 242. You can go follow Splash at Mr. Splash Man 19. Then you can go follow Matthias over at Matthias_A_K. And then go follow the baseball Twitter account for the show at LAR_baseball. Splash has been making some amazing graphics talking about all 30 MLB teams as we get ready to go to opening day. And all of these graphics are all about in the style of MLB Power Pros. Splash, that's what you want to say real quick?
I would like to give a shout out to Nate Eaton's mom. She retweeted a couple of my tweets, or our tweets, the other day. I made the Nate Eaton graphic for the Royals right fielder, and I did a stat that he was one of, four or five guys to have at least 10 steals and a steal every 4 games or something. So that's cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
No, shout out to Nate's mom.
Yeah, Nate Eaton's mom. Yeah. But yeah, no, Splash has been putting a ton of work on those graphics and has been doing excellent, excellent, excellent work. But for everyone here at Lost is My Replacement, I'm Alex Clark. I've been your host for today's podcast. Make sure you go follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that fun stuff. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and hope to see you all real soon.